Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening, and thanks for hanging out with me one more time. Because otherwise I'm just sitting here by myself, and that feels kind of silly. What's the point? So thank you one and all for being here. My guest tonight is Meg Beeler, and we're going to be talking about shamanism and all the usual fun things we talk about, and hear her story. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And there's always a conversation that comes up in my life about what do you do and what is shamanism. And I realized that it's easier to talk about mysticism and what is a mystical experience before you try and explain what shamanism is. And before that, you can talk about physics because people like science, makes them feel comfortable. So one of the things that's really fascinating is what physicists are telling us now is that 4% of the universe, so 4% of everything, is matter, is physical stuff. And the rest of it is empty space, except we know it's not empty, or something else, but we can't read it with any of our technology. So they talk about dark matter and dark energy. But, you know, 96% of everything is stuff that we can't figure out. So our senses are tuned to that 4%. So there's this real narrow band of electromagnetic frequencies that our eyes can see, the visible spectrum, and a relatively narrow range of sounds, another electromagnetic frequencies that we can hear. There are animals on the planet that have wider visual ranges and wider auditory ranges than human beings do. But our senses are really designed to help us in this physical world, in this 4% of the universe that is physical. And Einstein taught us that energy and matter are really the same thing. You can convert energy into matter and matter into energy. That's interesting. So here we are with people saying, well, what is it that you do? It seems so strange. Everywhere on the planet, and literally every culture everywhere on the planet, going back to the furthest recorded stories that we have, which is 9,000 years or so, have had people that are called mystics or something like that. They are people who experience more than the physical. So we're going around listening to sounds in the physical world and seeing things that our eyes can pick up. And these folks are seeing and hearing things that are not in that realm. They're from that other 96%. They're from a broader range of things. And what's fascinating is if you start reading the mystical traditions from all over the world, they basically describe things in a really similar way and explain them in similar ways. So I have an experience that I have where I see things as a grid of light. Looks like three-dimensional graph paper made out of light, if that makes sense to you. Well, in one of the Hindu texts from thousands of years ago, there is a description of the nature of the universe being a net of jewels. Sure sounds like what I see. So somebody thousands of years ago saw something almost exactly the same way that I'm seeing it. Now, that's all very interesting and hopefully informative. And certainly there are things to be learned. I'm very frustrated that physicists and the other sciences are not saying, well, we don't have an answer, but there are these folks that have experiences. They're using their body to get information. And they're all saying the same thing. Maybe we should do some science around the stuff that they understand. Yeah. Well, there's a little of it going on. Taking it one step further into the shamanic experience, and shamanism is also something that is in every indigenous culture all over the world. Theme and variations, different by culture and by location and all the rest of it. But basically, understanding the planet and the universe in a certain way and interacting with it in a certain way. And so it's a mystical experience, but taken one step further, because the shaman lives in both worlds and does things in the non-physical world to assist with problems in the physical world. And that, to me, is the essence of the shamanic experience. So that why today I'm rambling on about this, I'm not sure, but maybe Meg will clarify it for us. Food for thought. You know, the physical world is like listening to an AM radio. I don't know if you're old enough to remember when there were only AM radios, but AM radio is a relatively hard to tune, short range way to get information and carry around a little receiver to do it. At this point, the only thing on AM radio is bad talk radio stations and country music, but you know, it used to be it was the only thing that we had. And now we've got FM and we've got satellite radio and we've got TV and cell phones, and they're all just electromagnetic frequencies that you need a different receiver for. It's all there, but if you have an AM radio, the only thing you can hear is country music. And that's the difference. Most people have nothing but AM and shamans are broadband. So it's an interesting way to live. More information than the average person is getting. So that's tonight's metaphysical music, and very much amusing. Well, I hope you were amused, but amusing. And let's have some fun with tonight's guest, Meg Beeler. Thanks so much for being on the show, Meg.
Well, thank you, David. It's wonderful to hear your musings on mysticism, because I actually find mysticism very hard to talk about, but I love doing it.
Well, you know, it's, as the song lyric goes, it's like trying to tell a stranger about rock and roll. If you don't have the experience, you're listening to AM radio and you understand AM radio, and it's where you get your stuff, and you just don't know the other stuff exists. And of course, historically, it's been made wrong and bad. And, you know, there's all kinds of historical stuff about people who are different in
those
ways.
Well, one of the things I was thinking about as you were talking and musing is that very clearly for me, both shamanism and energy work have been vehicles for exploring the 96%, the mystical world. And I'm sure that's true for you too, but it's, you know, when you think of it as, think of those pieces of the world as doorways into this vast universe, you know, for some of us, it's pretty compelling to go and explore them and learn how to use them.
Right, right.
And one of the things that's been coming up for me more and more is the importance of normalizing shamanism and normalizing energy work and just showing people how accessible it is. We've all had access. You know, I was talking to a friend this morning whose two-year-old started talking a long time ago. His two-year-old started talking about the family that he'd lost in a landslide, you know, from a previous life.
Right.
And the parents were like, whoa, but they understood that there's this access that we have, and most of us have it. We just have to kind of reopen the doors.
Right. And little kids are broadband until a certain point. Although the New Kids, it never gets shut down, but it used to be they got socialized out. At some point, it was little kid stuff and imaginary playmates, and no, that's not real. And it kind of gets swept under the carpet, and the kid goes on and grows up. And
well, my mother hassled me for dreaming too much.
Mm-hmm.
Took me a long time to get back to it.
Yeah, yeah. And many of us of a certain age, as the saying goes, were the way showers and came in before the Indigo Children and all the rest of it, and were having experiences that were different from the people around us. Although, as I put together some family stories, I realized that I'm probably a third generation shaman, or whatever you want to call a sensitive person. There were other people in my family. But it wasn't one of the things that was talked about, or that was a primary thing in the family. They were just, you know, if you wanted to know something or something was wrong, you went to grandma. You know, if you needed something and you didn't know how you were going to get it, you went to my dad, because somehow things would show up if you told him there was a problem.
Oh.
Which was very good when he was during World War II, when he was a supply sergeant. But it wasn't talked about as being a mystical or shamanic or witchcraft or any of the languages that are used to discuss those kinds of experiences. So until I started having the experiences in my 20s, I really didn't put the pieces together.
Well, you're lucky to have had people in your family to who were still using those skills. I mean, my family was immigrant Irish, and mm-hmm. like many immigrants, there were, you know, just as you put aside the language and culture, you put aside the mysticism, and you didn't talk about the fairies and the little people. And
right.
So after three or four generations, it kind of got really vague.
Right. And then somebody like you shows up and rediscovers it all over again, and then realizes it was always there in the tradition. And which gets to the question I always ask, how did your life and your journey and walkabout unfold for you to be here now doing the work that you do?
It was luck and wonderful synchronicity. But really, as a child, I was lucky to live in the country and to be able to play outside and connect with the natural world. And in fact, the natural world felt a lot safer to me than the human world.
Mm-hmm.
So I had very deeply rooted physical connections with nature that are still quite vivid to me. And I had dreaming then. I used to think about seeing like an eagle. I don't know where that came from, and I don't think I talked to anybody about it, but there was this impetus to see more broadly and to, I suppose you could say, to connect with these other creatures. So, you know, I grew up, lived my life, went to college, sort of was disconnected from that largely. And then when I escaped, I grew up in California, but I lived on the East Coast for 8 years. And when I escaped back to California, the first thing that happened to me was that my physical body gave a big sigh of relief to be back with the rolling hills and the rocks and the geography mm-hmm. of California. And I was really struck by that. I didn't know anybody, you know, I never read anything about that, but it was very visceral. So I knew I was back where I was supposed to be. And I got to have periods in my life when I spent a lot of time still, you know, connecting on a physical level, organic gardening, hiking, backpacking, all those kinds of things. So for a lot of, you know, a third of my life, I was doing that. And there wasn't much direct spirit that I was aware of. And then sort of midlife, a friend of mine was, well, a couple things happened. I joined a group of women who were studying goddess cultures, and so I learned a lot about ritual and ceremony and, you know, basic practices of cleansing and calling in and connecting and all that kind of thing. And the mm-hmm. part that interested me most was trance, what's called trance in the Wiccan tradition, where you you go and explore the mystical world. And so that got me going in that direction. And then a friend of mine was bringing this man from Cusco, who is an amazing heart-filled person, to the Bay Area. And I had, you know, I'd been a Buddhist, I'd done yoga, I'd done all this stuff, but I had never met somebody who drew me so directly into my heart.
And so he was from Ecuador?
No, he was from Peru, from
Peru.
Cusco.
Okay.
And he'd grown up, you know, his father was Spanish and his mother was indigenous Quechua. So mm-hmm. he'd grown up in the kitchen because he didn't really like the Spanish patriarchal scene. But he hung out with his mother and her friends and with the village people. And he was an indigo before we knew what indigos were. He met his wife one night on the top of the cathedral in Cusco. They were both wandering around there in their double bodies.
So, all right.
Not in their physical bodies, but their double bodies. He was his name is Americo Ybarra, and he was an enormous influence, both because he came from the heart and spoke to the heart, and because he opened the doorways for me of the world of the Caro and the Quechua people and the High Andes, who still live in reciprocity within the web of life. And it was a very interesting time about 25 years ago, because in non-quote literate cultures where people don't write things down, there's not a lot of need to articulate what you're doing. It's just assumed. Right. Everybody does it. So it was very seat of the pants, paying attention to what's going on here. How is the energy moving in the ceremony? What's happening in this world? And the most important thing for me was that I had never been around people who were so joyful all the time. These were people who, you know, in material terms had nothing. They lived in stone huts. There was no electricity then. There was a lot of malnutrition. But there was a joyfulness that I had never experienced. And I came home and I wanted to know how they did that, because I did not grow up in a joyous family. Say the least. So I found myself going back and back to Peru, even though my daughter was little, and it was kind of not crazy, but I didn't know why I was doing it exactly. I just was called, so I kept going.
Right.
Taking in everything, and then, of course, I couldn't travel all the time, so when I wasn't there, I was reflecting on things and trying to integrate it. So that was a really important thing for me, that I integrated in my own way, in my own time, and figured out what worked for me and how I could use practices and perceptions and so on. And then a period of my life came where my daughter was really suffering with severe depression and just not making it in the school system, and my parents were older and needing more than I could give them, and I was drowning, literally. So I started using the energy practices very concertedly, and by energy practices, I'm talking about the cosmology of the Andes is one of drawing in the energy of the universe and releasing the density that you're carrying around, and always exchanging that energy so that you're in the flow. You're in relationship, but you're in a flow and not holding on to the density and the sadness and despair or whatever. but always trying to connect with what they call the most, the lightest, most refined energy. And, you know, that's the energy of the cosmos. So I really was practicing that stuff. And I, in the beginning, it was like survival. Let's get through this day. And then after a while, it was, oh, this stuff is really making a difference in how I see the world. And I can open my heart a little bit more and not just run around being stressed. And then there was this, it began to weave the kind of energetic and spiritual things that I was, spiritual experiences were weaving with the physical. And that was very profound for me because, you know, I'm a Taurus. I'm an earth person. So when I did a meditation, for example, with one of the elements, I would visualize the element. I would feel the element. I would, you know, make it tangible for myself. Or when I did what I came to call the Earth Cosmos meditation, visiting places I love and sacred places around the planet, I would literally stop and see and remember what I had experienced, whether it was a path or a rock or a view. And so I began for myself weaving the physical and the spiritual in a way that became really profound. And so, you know, I eventually started teaching that and sharing it with other people and doing a lot of ceremony in the Bay Area on the mountains. There's a particular kind of Andean practice called a despacho ceremony where you make an offering. And the whole offering is symbolic as well as physical. And everything you put in and all the intentions that go into it are changing the whole thing moment by moment. So it's this dance of energy that's really remarkable. And by doing a lot of those and watching other people do them, I started to be able to perceive energy in a way that would have really shocked my mother, I'm sure.
No doubt.
And so another thread for me was that I also was drawn to core shamanism, what Michael Harner started. You know, he just passed last weekend. But he brought the practice of journeying to the three worlds, which is practiced all over the world, he brought it to people in a way that was accessible outside of the cultural framework. So you didn't have to study with this group or that group or become like a particular, you know, take on all the practices of a culture. You could learn to explore the mystical world with your power animal or teacher. And that really worked for me, you know, tying back to doing trance. That became my vehicle for understanding the world in a whole different way.
Right. Right. And that's what I was alluding to earlier. It's that movement from the physical world into the non-physical world. And there are many, many ways to do that. And that's a very accessible way that many people have learned. So, yes, that's
right.
Terrific. We're gonna go to a break. I want to come back and talk more about scaring your mom. That's always fun. let's tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Right. My website is megbeeler.com. I'm a shamanic guide and mentor and author. And if people are interested in the work, you know, just tapping into the work that I've been doing, Fintorn just published my book this year called Weave the Heart of the Universe into Your Life, Aligning with Cosmic Energy. Mm. And that book has many practices and ways of accessing your connection with specific pieces of nature, a tree or a stone or the wind or the water, and deepening your relationship that you can do on your own. And a little known piece of my life is that I worked in Silicon Valley for 20 years doing technical books. So I'm like a master of writing clear instructions.
Love it. Well, we are going to go to the break, and we will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. My guest is Meg Beeler, shaman and author and general fascinating person. And this is the Farkas Files on Empower Radio. I'm David Franklin Farkas, and don't go nowhere, because we'll be right back.
To empower your meditation, help you relax, sleep, or provide a calm background while you work. The Empower Meditation Channel is interruption-free. Listen now with the Empower Radio app, free in the App Store, or listen online at empower.fm. Soothe your soul, calm your mind. The Empower Meditation Channel.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. The difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. Studies prove that reading to a child regularly dramatically improves reading skills. And kids who read well by third grade are four times as likely to graduate. So United Way is calling for 1 million volunteers over the next 3 years. We're asking you to step up, make a pledge, tutor a child who needs help, mentor a kid who needs someone on their side, volunteer to read to children, make a difference. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Entire communities improve. The path to success or failure starts long before graduation day. And the difference between a graduate and a dropout could be you. Be a reader, tutor, or mentor. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge. Go to liveunited.org now. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2-new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Hi, this is Josh Groban. My favorite thing about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. The Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and helps get it to kids in need, but they can't do it alone. Find out how you can help at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Empower Radio.
Empowering you 24/7. Online at empowerradio.com.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest Meg Beeler. And I would just got the giggles when you were talking about scaring your mom. That's so much fun. But I was also fascinated with the ways that you connect to nature, to various aspects of nature. Could you give us an idea of some of the methods that you use for that?
Sure. What I did before, just before this interview, because I'd been on a call and then working on the computer for quite a few hours, as I went outside to one of my oak tree friends, and there's a really simple practice where you put your hands on the tree and you ask permission to connect with it, and then you put your back to it, so the center of your back is touching the tree, and you let the tree infuse you with whatever energy, wisdom it wants to give you. And then after a little while, not very long, because trees are pretty sensitive, you open your own heart and let the tree receive whatever it needs from you. And it's a deeply connecting experience, and also totally helps me shift my energy and attention. So there I am, grounded again in relationship with this tree, and whatever kind of mechanical problematic things in the world have just happened all day just dissipate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's you know, it's so simple as to be obvious, and yet the possibility that we can very easily communicate with trees in that way doesn't occur to a lot of us. So all it takes is a teacher showing you, and then you try it and it works and it changes your life.
Because you can so easily switch. I've had some amazing experiences with trees.
Mm.
And
what's one?
What's one? It's the tail end of learning that trees use the wind to communicate, that the rustling of the leaves and the way they move is their communication, and the wind does that for them. My dad died. It was part of the reason that part of the way I found my teachers. My dad died, and he worked in a place where he was much loved, and they planted a tree as a memorial to him. Mm. And so after the big ceremonial thing that they did at this hospital, I went around back to where this tree was and sat with the tree and thanked it and said, you're here to honor my father, but you don't know who he is. So let me give you a download of who my father was. And I just sat there, you know, giving him dad. And the wind picked up, changed direction by 90 degrees, and blew this little tree over so it bowed to us.
Mm, beautiful.
Yeah, it was extraordinary. There was also a grove of trees that I went past every day, and I would say hello to the grandmother tree, and all the leaves would rustle. And sometimes they'd mm. rustle as soon as I got close. It was amazing to learn how deeply you can connect to things like trees and how you can communicate.
Well, and how they communicate back. I mean, that's what,
yeah.
It's amazing in our culture. In other cultures, it's normal. They just
right.
know that happens. So we're kind of bereft in those lessons of
right.
of reciprocity.
I sit here at my desk and I look out across this property to two fruit trees that hold the energy for this part of the land. And you know, I call them grandmother and grandfather. And in the winter, it's kind of hard to get down there in the snow and hang out with them. But I have a similar experience with them. I start getting down there and the leaves rustle and we have our moments of communion together.
Mm.
But
yeah,
I can see
Sunday,
them all day.
On Sunday, I was doing a gratitude despacho ceremony. I have a medicine wheel, and I went up to the wheel. And normally, I invite people, but I didn't really have energy to invite people, and I just wanted to do it. So, you know, I set everything out, and I'm putting in the layers of the offerings. And it's kind of windy, and often when the wind is picking up, you know, it's going to blow the things you just put in
right.
away. So, I now know to watch, because at some point when the alignment gets into focus in the offering, the wind stops.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very calm, and then the world is in this receptive place. And it still amazes me, and is a gift to be able to perceive that. and not to make any big deal about, oh, I did this, but to be able to perceive it and understand that there's this back and forth, like this engagement on both sides. And that's what the Indra's net, the web of jewels, is all about.
Right.
That every being is a jewel in the net. And when I'm reminded of this huge oak tree I met on a hike many years ago, and it wasn't a windy day, but it was in a big grassy field, so there weren't other trees around it. And I was standing looking at it, and I watched how a tiny little breeze would rustle the far branches, and how that reverberation would move through the whole tree out to the other side. And it was like, whoa. So I've never quite noticed that before, but that very sensitive responsiveness. And that's how I want to live my life, is being responsive to the whole web, and not just the proclamations from Washington or whatever.
Yeah, let's not get started with Washington and who's making proclamations.
This is connecting with the world around you is an alternative to that. And it's a way of shifting your attention. And I find that, the idea of shifting your attention from one thing to another, it's basic in shamanism. In shamanic work, you step between this world and that world. So if you have a choice, if you just had an incredible technological hassle about your website or whatever, you can stay in that energy, or you can go out and talk to your tree, and then kind of doesn't matter so much anymore. And being able to be fluid in that way is in lots of ways the essence of what I'm trying to do and what I'm trying to teach people in my writing and in my direct work. Because that fluidity lets us find our centers in a different way, find our essence and be in our essence. Whereas if we're held in and defended by the horribleness of the world, or somebody in our family, or a situation at work, our whole bodies are rigid and we can't engage. So I know you know this, but trees are a good teacher in that way.
It's such a different way to be in the world. And even if you don't have much access to the natural world, I'm a city kid, but my dad loved the outdoors, and still, there was that connection to the wind, and we lived near the ocean, so a connection to the ocean and to all of that, even when I was on the subway platform.
Right. Well, I have this one practice in my book of connecting with a weed, because I know many, many people are stuck in the city and don't have a lot of, or they haven't thought that they have a lot of access to nature. But I was in a Vipassana 10-day meditation retreat many years ago, and it was a silent retreat. So we ate two meals, breakfast and lunch, and you couldn't talk to anybody, while you're eating, right? So you're just sitting there eating and paying attention to your food. And I sat in the same place every day on this little rise, and there were these, I think it was wild oats. There were just these dried weeds there. And I went deeper and deeper and deeper into paying attention to these weeds in front of me. It was like totally wonderful. And it opened the possibility that I didn't have to go on massive hikes to connect with nature, that I could be present with whatever was there and connect in the same way. So it really changed my life, sitting with those weeds. That was pretty cool.
And, I totally get it. And people who spend time in nature totally get that. And other people, if you said that, would just roll their eyes and wonder what is going on with you. And it's their loss. you know, one of the things about our culture at the moment is that it's about distraction. You know,
right.
You know, I've never seen Game of Thrones or the Kardashians. The sports games are of no interest to me, you know. Millionaires in spandex playing children's games? No, I don't think so. But people, you know, it's a whole thing and it's their rituals. You know, if you're watching the Super Bowl, you have to wear the clothing and you have to get the food and you have to get drunk and you have to do all of that stuff as part of the ritual of doing that right.
I think what the message that you and I are both carrying into the world is that is a cultural trance, and there is choice about whether you continue in that trance or start feeding some other energies and other ways of being. And there's no judgment about it. I mean, some people want to stay in the cultural trance, some people don't. But those of us who have some draw to the tree or the stone or the wind or the mysticism, right, or just looking at the stars, that there's this entire world of all the indigenous peoples around the world understood this stuff. And like you said during your musings, it's a little mystifying why scientists don't get it and start looking at that more. But I figure, you know, it doesn't matter. They're going to study what they study, and I can study what I study. And, you know, a few years ago, a spirit told me to start making offerings to the star beings. Well, I had heard that my teachers did that, but I'd never seen that particular offering. So I did all these journeys to just try to understand, what am I supposed to do? And then I got, particularly, you know, I got pictures of what the offering should look like and where I should do them on the sacred mountains around the Bay Area. And so I started inviting people, and I wrote about it and invited people in other places to do them. And it was like this wonderful project where it was totally seat of the pants. I mean, now I see what was going on, but I didn't know what I was doing. And I felt very tenuous the whole time. And yet it was this very beautiful, mystical project that still has repercussions in the world, because those star beings are present in different ways to help us meet these troublesome times. And they might not be visible to you or to me, but their energy is present. And it the more we can connect with those kinds of things to feed the beautiful world that we want to create, the better we feel about things.
Right. Well, to me, shamanism is all seat of the pants. You know, you go into the middle of whatever it is and say, what would you have me do now?
Mm.
What is it that I'm supposed to do? Of course, there's often the conversation that goes, really? That'll work? Will that hurt? Yeah. Depending on what you were just told to do. Sometimes I get some very interesting instruction. But it's always going into the situation with a sense of the communication will be there and it will tell you the right thing to do for that situation.
Well, let's talk about the cosmos a bit in that regard. About 6 months ago, I love it. There's a astro site where you can see pictures of the stars every day, which is really fun because, you know, telescopes from all over the world. And so I love looking at them. But there's this other kind of spiritual energetic exploration. And about 6 months ago, I was told to start creating these basically light tunnels. I mean, they're not, they're pretty malleable edges. But to visualize them from the earth up into the fifth world. So I started doing that, just obviously seat of the pants. And then I invited a few friends and we've been doing it together. And it's just this remarkable, right now what's going on is it's incredibly healing for us. we're doing this work. It's not work. We're going to call it facilitating and being in it, because it's not work at all. But we're experiencing ourselves in these light tunnels and just observing what's happening and what we need to do next. And I was so touched when a couple of weeks ago, the science fiction writer Ursula Le Guin died. And for about 5 days, I had the sense that her consciousness was entering into one of these light tunnels and moving on to the fifth world. And it was just so beautiful to be a part of that and to be offered the opportunity to hang out in that way.
Right. Right. Oh, there's so much to talk about, and we're getting close to the end of the show. What would you like to leave people with?
Well, you know, I offered to read a little meditation, and I think that would be fun to do.
Okay, we've got a couple of minutes.
So this is called Releasing and Becoming Source. So anybody who's listening now or later, just get yourself grounded and speak out loud one thing you want to let go of, one obstacle. That might be grief or fear or anxiety or frustration, just one thing. And then breathe that one thing out into the universe, out into past the stars, out into blue-black space. See your obstacle flying into the heart of the universe. Now breathe back in on the in-breath, the power of the universe, the alive, vibrating energy, a sea of potential, empty but full of all possibility. Breathe it into your heart. Fill your heart with the energy and power of the universe. On your next out-breath, breathe the obstacle out. On the in-breath, breathe in the power. Repeat this over and over until your heart fills and your energy shifts. Notice how you feel just in this moment when you're filled with the power of the universe.
Hmm. Wonderful.
Yes, definitely. I guess one thing I want to say as we near the end is that energy releasing and filling practices can be and are really very simple in the Caro view of the world and the high endies. You're releasing your density and drawing in the lighter energy and doing that all day long. And as you do that all day long, you become like a river, flowing and flowing. And it empowers you to shift your stories and the identity you carry and all your way of being in the world, even if for a moment. And each time you do that, each time you become fluid just for a minute, it's as if you expand out of your small self, your ego, into the larger world. So you begin to get build a skill in that breathing with the universe, breathing within the web of life. And it's very healing and very wonderful for all of us to do that, because we're so beset with our personal things and our the state of the world, which is more and more drastic every day. And it's like the only thing we can do is, as individuals, is be our most fluid selves, and in that state, do our best to create a more beautiful world.
Indeed. Absolutely wonderful. So let's make sure people know where to find you again.
Okay, so my website is MegBeeler.com. And my book is Weave the Heart of the Universe into Your Life, Aligning with Cosmic Energy. You can buy it at your local independent bookstore, from Findhorn, from it's just been taken over by Inner Traditions, Bayer and Company.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, online in the various Amazon and those places. And that book would give you a lot more practices like we just did, and some insight into the Indian cosmology that is a really beautiful alternative to what most of us grew up with, let us say.
Right.
And I live, you know, I live on Sonoma Mountain and a little north of San Francisco. But I work with people in person and worldwide online. And I really, one of the things that I really enjoy doing is people can set up a free call with me to try to figure out what they're doing in their energy shamanic practice.
That's
and it's
terrific.
A really fun way of connecting. And I try to help people figure out a plan for doing whatever they want to do. So they can do that through your website? Right, right. And there's a bunch of, you know, I have articles on soul retrieval and shamanic healing for me and different meditations that you can get so that you can just sort of explore a lot on your own without making any commitment.
Well, as always happens with the wonderful people that I have on the show, we're out of time.
Yeah.
So thank
well, there's
you so
no
much.
Time, no space.
Thank you so
it's
much for being
going.
On the show. My guest is Meg Beeler, and check out her book and her website. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, David. Meg. David, it's been a wonderful conversation.
Likewise. And if you guys out there are wondering, who is this guy, David, and what in the world does he do? You can go to househealing.com. And there's every technology for getting in touch with me, including a link to schedule a free 20-minute phone appointment to talk about whatever is going on with a person, place, situation, business, whatever it happens to be, and see how my work might be helpful to you. If you want more about the show, and we've been doing this for over 7 years now, I can't even believe it. You can go to, cleverly enough, thefarkasfiles.com, and the whole archive is there. But you can also, at this point, the easiest way to listen to the program, any of the programs on Empower Radio, and find particular episodes is to use the smartphone app, which comes in both smartphone flavors. And that will allow you to go to the Empower Radio platform and look at all the shows, but whichever one you click on, you can look at all the episodes and pick the one you want to listen to. It's really very cool. It's getting so incredibly easy to listen to things. And Empower Radio now also has a meditation channel. So if you're looking for calming music with no commercials, it's a resource that's really wonderful. So here we are again. And again, I want to thank you for hanging out with me. Otherwise, what's the point to doing these shows? There are people all over the world listening wherever they are, whenever they are, at whatever time and place is convenient for them. And I hope that you get something out of the show that it's enjoyable and it's helpful and helps you with some kind of insight, because otherwise, what are we doing it for? So thanks so much for being with me. And until next time, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere, I hope, on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week. We'll be right back.